Welcome, everybody, to another Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Maddie Lee, here joined by Joe Masato, per usual, and a special guest. We've got Cam Jordan in the house, too, at the Oklahoman Studios after the Thunder's 115-104 win over the Pelicans. Jordan. Yep. I'm going with last names. Jordan Masato. Jordan,
all right,
this is your first game covering an NBA game, correct?
Yes, it was. It was the first one for me.
How'd it go?
I'll tell you what. The last time that I sat courtside at a Thunder game was my first season. I ended up dancing with Rommel the Bison that night. Long story short.
You did not do that tonight. I'm a little disappointed.
I'm sorry that I let you down. It was interesting. You know, you don't really realize from even on TV how well you can hear like just communications between players, officials, and coaches when you're that close to the floor. So that was pretty unique getting to hear that and be a part of that.
Oh, and that was fun too with the coaches challenge tonight. So we had Billy Donovan's first coaches challenge of the regular season. He's done one before. And he actually, we asked him about it pregame, which was very fortunate timing, but he ends up challenging a goaltending call on Nerlens Noel, and it looked, you could hear, speaking of what you're saying, you could hear Nerlens after the play talking to the officials and being like, he blocked it and then I blocked it, I was the second block, and he was talking about Dennis Schroeder because it looked like Schroeder got a hand on the ball before Nerlens came in and knocked it against the glass. And so Billy challenged it, and the call was upheld. So Billy still has not won a coach's challenge. Masato, you were there.
Thank you.
You were there for Billy's post game. What did you say about that?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to turn to the rule book eventually on this one because I thought it was.
What'd you do, Cam? All right, I don't know if you guys can hear it, but it sounded like Joe just went absolutely quiet.
Are we back?
I don't think we were ever gone.
Okay, we're here. I hope everyone is still listening.
I hope so, too. Remember, the last time that Eric and I tried to do this, we messed it up a lot, and no one could hear me. So hopefully we've done better this time.
I think it's okay. Okay, this sounds better to me. I don't know. We're trying something new tonight. But anyway, yeah, back to the challenge. Billy's explanation was that the referees told him that the ball was still going up. So even if Dennis Schroeder got his hand on it, the ball was still going up and still had a chance to go in the basket. But I thought that once the initial guy made contact, that being Schroeder, that it was basically a live ball. It doesn't matter if you pin it off the backboard or not. But anyway, you know, Schroeder definitely touched it, but Billy lost the challenge, and I think it was good timing to ask him about the challenges because I had kind of been wondering why he hadn't used them because it's almost like a thing. Almost everyone in the NBA is losing challenges. Like, this new rule, I think, has been largely bad. People are complaining that it stops the pace of play and that coaches are never winning them.
And it's weird that even when you do win one, you don't – I mean, not – it's not weird because I've done this in the G League before, but like in most sports, when you get to challenge, if you win it, you get another chance. Like,
yeah,
you get it back. But that's not the case here. You just don't use your timeout.
You only get one, win or lose. And you also, you have to call timeout. And then I don't think you get that timeout back either when you're challenging. So it's kind of a strange rule. Anyway, Billy Donovan is 0 for 1. And I kind of think it's a, you know, use it or lose it type situation. Like, why wouldn't every coach on, you know, late in game, before it gets to the final 2 minutes, you might as well use it. Billy hadn't done that. He did it today and lost. So, just a fun fact for today.
And it was a little earlier than... Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, second quarter.
My bad, I'm misleading people. Win or lose, the timeout's gone. So, there's, like, the only advantage to winning it is that you win it. You don't get your timeout or your...
Yeah. You're not rewarded in any other way.
No.
Other than the call being reversed.
It's odd. Anyways, we completely buried the lead and went to this...
That was the most important part of the game.
That's it. We had a couple cool storylines coming into this game. Well, we'll start with injuries. That's not a cool storyline. But Steven Adams, again, did not play tonight. He's still dealing with that left knee contusion. And honestly, there's no point in making him hurry back when you're playing the Pelicans in November. So no surprise, really, that they're making sure that he's fully healthy before he comes back. You had Nerlens Noel, who had gotten his foot stepped on Wednesday in that game, and so he was limited in practice, but was able to play tonight, and he started and actually had a pretty good game again. And on the other side, obviously, Zion is not playing. He still has that knee thing. And then Brandon Ingram only played 13 minutes because of a head injury.
Yeah, I asked Alvin Gentry after the game about if he saw what happened, because we noticed that I recognized during some time in the second quarter he was running back down the floor and he had looked over toward the bench, and not that he looked confused, but he was like pointing at the bench and then was talking with them, but I couldn't tell what he said. And I asked Alvin about that post game, and he just mentioned that he didn't see the play either. He didn't want to speculate and say that he was possibly in concussion protocol by any means, just that it was a head injury and that they would talk with the trainers and hope that he could get back with them pretty soon. But with him coming in as the Pelicans' leading scorer, that definitely affected them in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big loss. I thought it changed the game. You know, behind Drew Holiday, Brandon Ingram's their best player, and it created some interesting matchups going forward. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of basically what happened on the injury front in this one. I mean, there are a lot of guys hurt coming in, and then I guess not an injury, but Terrence Ferguson, he was held out in the second half for flu-like symptoms. So Hamadou Diallo started the third quarter.
Yeah, well, we may as well just dive into those weird line of things and we can come back to storylines. So to close the second quarter, first off, you had the Thunder going small, and that included, you know, having their three point guards on the floor at the same time, which we've seen plenty of. But also, they played Neil Gallinari at the five, and then Ferguson, I guess technically, at the four. But, you know, you have four guards out there and Neil Gallinari, and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, they outscored the Pelicans 23-12 in the final 440 of the second quarter. And it's not just that they went small. I mean, they went super small. Like, small ball is usually like, you know, you have a power forward and he slides over to center and everyone slides down a spot. You had 6'5" Hamadou Diallo playing power forward, which is just crazy, because you had, you know, Dennis Schroeder and Chris Paul, who are right at 6 foot, and then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's 6'6", basically playing the three, and then Gallinari playing the five. So I thought it was a great offensive lineup. They can't go to it in bigger spurts because they'll just get out rebounded so badly. And they did that when Jahlil Okafor was off the floor. And I think Nicolo Melli was the center at that time, so they weren't really afraid of him beating up Gallinari in that five matchup.
Yeah, he's not very tall.
No. Yeah, and he's not a big bruiser like Okafor is, or even Jackson Hayes. So they really took advantage of the matchup, and I thought as far as ball movement, it was probably best with that lineup. I mean, they looked comfortable together.
Yeah, it was really nice. And then on top of, you have the ball movement, and then Schroeder's the best point guard on that team at getting out in transition, because he can run the floor. And so he was penetrating, getting to the rim in transition. And then you had the ball movement that naturally comes from having four guards on the floor at the same time. And it pulled them back into the game.
Yeah. What's the next storyline you guys want to attack here?
Storyline number two. We had two cousins playing each other. And Joe, you wrote sorry, I went away from the last names.
That's okay. We have to be formal at the beginning and now we can be more casual.
And then loosen up.
Yeah.
You wrote a great story about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Nikhil Alexander-Walker coming into this game. Want to give us a little, by the way, definitely go check that out on oklahoman.com. And if you have a paper from today, read it there.
We're showing our age here. You sorted the paper.
I love the print paper. This is not just me giving a plug. I still subscribe to magazines.
Awesome. Yeah,
I love opening a print paper. If you are still getting the print paper, I support you.
Yeah. So this story was in Saturday's Oklahoman, and it was basically Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Nikhil Alexander Walker, who was a first-round pick of the Pelicans this past summer. Shai obviously was in the previous draft in his second year in the NBA, but they grew up together in Toronto. Shai's dad and Nikhil's mom are brother and sister, and Shai's dad was basically a father figure to Nikhil growing up. And not only did they grow up together, but they also went from Toronto to Chattanooga, where they played high school basketball together at Hamilton Heights in Chattanooga. They had a really good program there. Since they weren't at home, they were both living with their high school coach, Zach Farrell. So I talked to their coach, and you know, it was just interesting how, you know, he basically, you know, was there, filled in as their family for 2 years while they were in Tennessee. And now, you know, they were both thought of not as five-star guys, not as, you know, McDonald caliber players, but they both became first round draft picks and now are playing in the NBA against each other, which was pretty cool. And there was a great scene after the game of them swapping jerseys.
Yeah, it was really cute. And then Shai afterwards talked about how it was, you know, really just a dream come true, because obviously growing up both in basketball, both obviously talented, that was their dream to both play in the NBA, and now they're here.
It was even those couple of sequences there early on in the game when they guarded each other on like a consecutive possession, so that was pretty neat as well.
Yeah, you can tell that they're, I mean, obviously they spent a ton of time growing up, so they've gotten to know each other's tendencies. And before the game, Nikhil talked about like how it was funny watching film, because they played against each other in college, but he said it was funny getting ready for this game and watching film because it's just so familiar. He could like anticipate what Shai was about to do, and from knowing him for so long. Yeah, Nikhil didn't play that much. He played about 8 minutes, but he was good when he was on the floor.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just those two guys.
Except for he only shot 1 of 5. but he was moving and cutting and handling the ball well.
He's a guy that very similar to Shai, in that Shai, at the spot he was taken in last year's draft, people, you know, those next day grades, people graded the Clippers high for making a draft day trade with him and getting Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And then Nikhil Alexander-Walker was thought of to be sort of a steal in this draft. So this is not the last of this matchup that we've seen. It'll be fun to follow. And
the Thunder get the Pelicans more times so soon.
27 more times in the next month. So.
Exactly. Precisely that many.
Speaking of, so both of them are 21. They're like old veterans compared to Darius Bazley, who's 19. And Maddie, that's who you wrote about after the game. So why was he so dang good tonight? What happened?
that's a good question. So Bazley finished the night with a career high of 17 points. And up until tonight, his career high, I say career high, it's 6 games in, but was 5 points before now. And so he said, we'd heard, rewind to preseason. There's, I think, the second preseason game. He told story about how Chris Paul went up to him, and because he had passed up a 3-point shot after missing one, and Chris Paul was like, look, I'm giving it to you for a reason. I wouldn't pass it to you if I didn't think you could make the shot. And then he had a very similar conversation with him again on Wednesday, where they were waiting, as Darius told it, they were waiting for the coaches to come in pregame on Wednesday to address the team, and Chris Paul went to him and was like, hey, like, we're getting you the ball for a reason. Just keep shooting, whether you make 30 or miss 30, just keep shooting. And sure enough, tonight he misses his first two threes, and then he gets Chris Paul passes it to him with fractions of a second left on the clock, and he lets it fly and makes it. And it's like this great buzzer beater moment. He's like clearly he's smiling, and it seemed like he was like trying not to smile as that big as he was going around and giving everyone high fives as they're coming off for the end of the first quarter. But great moment. And then like a minute into the next quarter, he gets the ball again and makes another three. And so he really started rolling tonight. And it's not just that Darius had a good night. Like, obviously he's going to have ups and downs throughout the season, but the Thunder really needs him to develop and needs other young guys to develop. And so it's really important that they stay true to that. But we saw when Chris Paul wasn't on the floor in preseason at Dallas, they fell apart and they started too many guys were trying to just do it themselves, and their offense was terrible. And so this team really needs to keep that ball movement going and develop those young players, not just for this season, but beyond.
Yeah, I mean, and with that movement, I mean, Darius basically is a guy where the ball doesn't really stick in his hands. He's either a catch-and-shoot type guy, or he's already shown the evolution to put the ball on the floor and, you know, create some passes with himself. And, like, you know, I think it's unique for a young guy. I mean, we're still seeing, you know, Terrence Ferguson and Hamadou Diallo struggle with such things. And Darius Bazley's bigger than they are and lankier, and he's still handles the ball really, really well, and you're seeing things from him that I think have to be encouraging as the Thunder begin this rebuilding process. Like, yeah. He's a guy that I think is going to be a featured piece.
And he's who's drafted number 23 overall. If you can get value at that spot in the first round, like, you're in really good shape, especially with we all know how many draft picks the Thunder has for the next 1,000 years, all of them.
It's like the same number that they play the Pelicans in the next, yeah, like, month.
Even.
Like 27, I think. Month. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bazley's, you know, Donovan, I think, was a little hesitant. I know you weren't in the post-game locker room, but you've said this on several of our Donovan's post-game press conference, but you said this in several podcasts, like, he sort of guarded against Hamadou Diallo last year, like, when he was playing so well in the beginning. It was like, mm-hmm. You know, don't buy too much into it. He wasn't throwing his guy under the bus, but it was like the game changes. Like, they have film on you now. And, like, Billy did that with Darius Bazley today. Like, Billy did not even want to call it a breakout game because I think he's worried about, like, that same narrative developing with Bazley that it did Diallo at this time last year.
Right, and we saw Hami hit that rookie wall once teams did get film on him, and he fell out of the rotation in the second half. And he's done a lot to work his way back into it, and he's buffed up on defense a ton, which helps to keep him in the game. And Billy Donovan has just been very complimentary about how consistent and reliable was the word that he used the other day, like seven times, how reliable he has been this season, which last year we saw, you know, these big spurts of him playing really well, and then also the struggles of moving to a new level.
I think when you talk about his development and like you said, the reliability, he had the second most minutes of anyone played for Oklahoma City tonight. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was on the floor. He was really active. When Brandon Ingram was still in the game at the beginning of the game, they put Hami on him, and that's New Orleans' best players, averaging nearly 27 points a game, and he guarded him pretty well. And I mean, you saw they gave him the ball on offense. They let him drive. They let him pass. They let him do a little bit of everything. Shot needs a little work, but he, overall, like you said, his confidence is, you can tell the big step that he's taken from last year to this year, and it's really easy to see why Billy's been so high on all of that.
Yeah, before we knew that Terrence was dealing with flu-like symptoms in that second half, and we saw Hami start, I thought, you know, heck, he's earned that place. Like, he's out playing Terrence Ferguson now. Now, it wasn't because of that. It's because Terrence is sick. But, like, that competition is going to be really interesting to follow because they're playing the same spot. They've got similar skill sets, and they're both defense-first guys with a ton of athleticism, and neither shoots the ball really well. I mean, Terrence is better shooter than Hami. But
Terrence last season had that month, it was like January, where he was shooting lights out from three-point range. And so far this season, he's had one good shooting game and has kind of been pretty quiet.
It's not like he shot poorly. He just doesn't shoot. No.
Which is, would be interesting to see if Hami did end up in that starting lineup, if a similar thing would happen to him. Just because, I mean, obviously different skill set. He's a lot better driving to the basket. But when you have both, that starting lineup has Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari, all of whom can shoot the ball, and it then would that cause a drop off for Hami's shots? Because Terrence, we know when he gets going, he can shoot the three really well, but he's been pretty consistent with saying, like, my job is to go out there and play really good defense. I'm not hunting for shots. If when I get them, I will take them.
Yeah. Hami also had, like, his, like, encore slam dunk contest performance tonight, I thought. I mean, like, J.J. Redick sprinted out of his way on a breakaway slam, and then later in the game he had a windmill that was like, oh, man, you're going to get in a lot of trouble if you miss that, and he made it, and the crowd goes crazy. But he is fun to watch. I mean, he just tries to tear the rim off.
Yeah, and Billy's been very excited. Both of them, both Hami and Billy have talked a lot about how they, over the summer, Hami has gotten a lot better at using his athleticism effectively and not going outside of what his identity as a player is or their identity as a team.
Speaking of his athleticism, we talked about this a little bit walking out of the arena. Like, on that play with J.J. Redick, I didn't expect him to jump like that and be able to dunk it because it didn't seem like where he was at on the court to when he could do that getting to the basket. I thought he was just going to go for an easy up and under layup or something. And all of a sudden, his head is above the rim and he's throwing down an absolute just monster dunk that really fired up the crowd. It's like, where did that come from?
He has crazy spring. Yeah. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but we have seen him just like from a stroll at the practice facility, then just rise up and dunk the ball. There's a reason he was invited to compete in the dunk contest, even though he had fallen out of the rotation at that point. Obviously not when he was invited by the time that the contest actually happened, but
has he said if he wants to do it again, like in the future? Some guys only like to do it one time and then they're done.
He didn't specifically say it, but someone asked him about Zion not, I think it was Zion not saying that he didn't want to compete in the dunk contest, and Hami's answer made it sound like he was planning on coming back, defending his title.
Defending the title. Well, but that would be cool.
I don't know if he's actually specifically said that word for word.
Cam, going back to your, covering your first NBA game, like, what did, I feel like the Pelicans probably have a deeper collection of young talent, but just what was your thoughts covering them tonight and getting to know those guys a little better?
The biggest player that stood out to me, and like you said, they have plenty of young talent. Their most prized piece is out right now. It's Zion. Jackson Hayes, I found out earlier today, born in Norman. And that's pretty interesting. But Jackson Hayes, he's from Texas. He's just the latest in the line of Texas big men. I mean, if you go back to, you have Mo Bamba, Jackson Hayes, and there's another one in there that I'm forgetting off the top of my head right
Jared
now.
Allen.
Jared Allen with Brooklyn.
Miles Turner.
Those three guys. I mean,
so many of them.
You just go back, you wonder who's going to be the next one this year. He had a couple of putback dunks tonight where kind of the same thing. He was really aggressive on the offensive glass, and, they won the rebounding battle. The Pelicans did by 12, partially because when you have Steven Adams not in the game because he's hurt, that opens up the paint a little bit for the Thunder. They just don't have a big body like him outside of Steven Adams. But Jackson was really effective at getting to the rim and putting back offensive rebounds. He didn't come down and then try to jump back up. He would jump and seemingly hang in the air, grab the ball, and flush it. I think he did that two or three times, and that really invigorated his teammates on the bench and gave them a little bit of energy, but he's got some spring, and he played in a little some big situations there in the fourth. He actually was in the game when New Orleans was able to close the gap a little bit there in the fourth quarter, but they just kind of fell apart a little bit late. But he's someone who I think could be a real talent in this league.
Yeah, what was the mood like? I mean, they now fall to 1-5. What was the mood like in the locker room after, you know, a loss to a team that I'm sure they circled on the calendar and were like, hey, that could be a competitive game, and it was a competitive game.
I mean, if you look at the last three minutes of game time, the Pelicans made one basket and had five turnovers. So that's kind of what Alvin focused on in post game, was look at what we did well for 45 minutes, but then we fell apart in the last three. And Oklahoma City was able to kind of pull away, and I think everybody realized that. We talked with Josh Hart as well, and Josh kind of echoed those sentiments. He's like, we just can't make the turnovers. We can't make the same mistakes like that towards the end of the games. And that may come back a little bit. They had some players like Drew Holiday, their starting point guard. He's a veteran player. He's been through the league plenty of times and has shown that he's a great player. But with the youth that New Orleans has right now, those situations are ones that they're going to struggle with this year until they keep playing in them and playing them. And then they'll eventually be able to not turn the ball over. One of the things that I wrote about was toward the end of the game, they set a screen for Josh Hart to get down into the paint, and it actually worked. He had got free of his man and was kind of standing there, and Lonzo Ball tried to hit him with a bounce pass and kind of came a little bit late, and Dennis Schroeder was able to stick his hand out there. He deflected it, came up with the steal, and was fouled on his way back down the court, and Lonzo just kind of turned toward the bench and looked at Alvin and put his hands up and put his head down just because he realized, like, it's one of those little mistakes that is going to hurt this team, and I think it kind of has throughout the season. They've been scoring a lot of points, but little mistakes have kind of kept them out of winning ball games.
Yeah, well, Joe, we've seen a similar thing with the Thunder, where they've had basically all their losses were games where they were really, really close, and then things went poorly in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar, and obviously these two teams came into the night with the same record. Pelicans had a little higher hopes for the season. I think it's kind of been a worst-case scenario start for them with Zion getting hurt, and then combined with this 1-5 start, most of it having to do with Zion being hurt. But you kind of look at the roster, it's like, okay, Drew Holiday is a great veteran point guard. Thunder have Chris Paul. Lonzo Ball is that, you know, second, third-year guy who's like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And there's so many pieces, so many young pieces, and I think both of these teams are still trying to figure it out, especially in those crunch time minutes. I mean, the Thunder had not won a game in clutch time yet. They were 0-4, so this game was close down the stretch, and the Thunder ended up winning.
That seems like a good spot as any to wrap up, unless you guys have anything else to add.
I'm good.
I don't. All right. I think that's it.
Well, the Thunder play at home again. This is a nice little home stretch. not at all this. Here we have, they play the Magic on Tuesday, so we will be back with you then. But thank you for listening. Like it, love it, share it with your friends, your enemies, your neighbors, your pets, your siblings.
I can't think of anything. Cousins, that's the theme.
Oh,
of the,
yeah.
That's the theme of the night.
Definitely share it with your cousins, both blood and otherwise.
Yeah, everyone. Just be open.
And we will see you on Tuesday.